Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Observers say globally the demographic dividend is pivotal for achieving the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. But what is the demographic dividend? Well, it is a concept that many may not be familiar with, but what it entails is definitely part of our daily lives. The United Nations Population Funds, UNFPA, says the demographic dividend is the economic growth potential that can result from shifts in a population's age structure. It also says countries with the greatest demographic advantages for development are those entering a period in which the working age population will have a low proportion of young dependents and the benefit of good health, among other things. We will talk about this topic today, which is very complex, but our guests will simplify it and make us understand what it means. Joining us for more on the subject from New York via phone is Mabenge Ngam, Regional Director for West and Central Africa with the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA. Mr. Ngam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Joining us here in the studio is VOA's own Khalil Gay. Khalil, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And let me tell our listeners, if you'd like to participate, you can always send us an email at healthchat@voanews.com. So let me start. Let's just get into it. And Mr. Ngam, the demographic dividend. What is it? It sounds like a very complex theme or topic or subject.
Well, I think it can be defined very, very, very simply. And I think the easiest way is to look at two situations. One is a nation for which the population is predominantly young people. So this means that the fiscal effort to care about young people will be important because you have what we call a high burden, meaning that in almost in general cases you will have, let's say, very few people working to take care of the needs of a large number of young people. So this means in such situations, there will be limited opportunities for savings, and limited opportunity for savings means limited opportunity for investment, and investment is the engine for growth.
Yes.
And growth is the engine for employment and prosperity. And the second case is where you have, for example, a large cohort of a large part of the population who is at the working age. So this means they have the potential to contribute to wealth creation, to contribute to saving, because they will care, they will take care of a limited number of young people. So this means they have a low dependency ratio. So this means there is a potential for investment, high investment because of high saving, and then high growth. So the demographic dividend is all about the added productivity created by the second situation, provided that there are some significant investment in health, in education, in skill development, employment opportunities through conducive policies, like what happened in Asia, especially the case of the Asian dragon or the Asian tiger in the 60s, or what happened in Latin America in the 70s. And today, given the fact that in Africa you have a large cohort of young people who are really entering the working age, it's a unique opportunity for Africa to harness the demographic dividend and make sure that we generate the additional productivity that can take Africa forward. In a nutshell, it can generate about $500 billion every year for the next 30 years. And now I'm just talking about the first window of opportunity, that is the demographic dividend related to young people potential.
Mm. Very, very interesting. Now, Khalil, this is a subject that obviously is very critical, looking at development and other aspects of topics that you've covered in your work. So what is your take, and what have you talked to experts like Mr. Ngom about?
You know, experts like Mr. Ngom have done what they've needed to do to raise people's consciousness, especially African leaders. Mm-hmm. UNFPA, as you know, is focusing on several aspects of human development, you know, mm-hmm. and health, according to me, is a key aspect in the development. And
absolutely.
Health is one of the five
pillars,
you know, pillows or wheels
okay.
of a demographic dividend. So from here, I would like to ask Mr. Ngom, what is there for health in the demographic dividend? What can, how a good health policy can lead to the conclusions you just mentioned in your introduction?
Thank you. Thank you, Khalil. I think I did not mention an important dimension of the demographic dividend, because there have been a lot of confusion, a lot of discussion about high population growth or large population and its relationship with economic growth. So demographic dividend should be approached differently. So it should be approached through the lens of, age structure of the population, that is all about two factors. One is fertility rate, second, mortality rate. So it's a combination of these two that determine the age structure of the population. And I think this is really the backbone of the concept of demographic dividend, because the population, the age structure determine the economic behavior, the needs, and consumption patterns or investment patterns. But coming back to your question, since I mentioned mortality rate, just to elaborate on it, because your question is dealing with the health
yes.
aspect of the demographic dividend. When you talk about mortality rate, and especially in Africa, we think about issues like HIV/AIDS, because today, if you look at the young people under 19, they constitute the only group for which the mortality rate is increasing when it comes to HIV/AIDS.
Yes.
This is important.
Mm-hmm.
Second, these young people are also the ones that are the most affected when it comes to the big liabilities like child marriage. You know the relationship between child marriage and fistula,
yes.
child marriage, early pregnancy, unwanted pregnancies, difficulty in terms of access to family planning, the risk they face when they have early delivery, and so on and so forth. So the level of exposure of young people because of the lack of access to health, and the type of disproportionate exposure when it comes to some of the risks related to health. As such, it is difficult to harness demographic dividend without addressing the too many health challenges young people are facing.
Yes.
But let me just flag one thing here, because there is one thing that is good is the sustainable development goal is because they integrated, because health is related to education.
Yes.
Especially when you talk about young girls in Africa today. Early marriage and education are related. Employment opportunities in the family are also related to the future of young girls, their ability to stay to school, etc., etc. So it's why I think the fact that the post-2015 development agenda have made an incredible change in the business approach to development by putting forward the issue of integration. So
mm-hmm.
health is very, very correlated with education.
Yes. You know, those are the facts. You have given the facts, I mean, as technicians and as UNFPA. Now tell me, how committed are African leaders in really implementing the dividend?
That's a very good point, because is there a political will? What do you see?
Okay, I'm going to give you two answers. The first answer, I withdraw it from my last week mission in Banjul to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the African Youth Charter that was adopted on July 2nd, 2006 in Banjul. But it was very, very disappointing that 10 years later, only 38 out of the 54 states have ratified the charter.
Okay.
Where it was adopted by the entire head of state. So, they asked, at that time they had a roadmap for the implementation. But now, the good news is, that's my second answer, at least the Africans have come up, the African common position, when preparing for the post-2015 with their own vision for Africa. And in that vision, they have positioned very well the demographic dividend.
Okay.
Second, in Agenda 2063, approved by the head of state of the African Union, the demographic dividend is well positioned.
Well,
and
now,
it's what have
now, Mr. Ngom, do you think that reactions from heads of states and leaders in Africa are timely? Don't you fear that it may be too late if they don't start right now implementing the dividend?
No, I don't. I can't say that it's too late, because currently they have a summit in 2 months in July in Kigali.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They will discuss the roadmap UNFPA is currently preparing,
okay,
in partnership with the African Union Commission, the NEPAD, the African Development Bank. Second, they have decided that 2017 summit, both the ordinary and the next session that will happen in July 2017 will be on the demographic dividend. So what I want to say here is there is a very high political commitment, but it's not enough.
Okay.
They have asked for a roadmap. It's not enough, because they had a roadmap some 10 years ago. Very little has happened.
So,
but now they have no option to make the active move to address the issue of young people. Because whether we like it or not, we have today a crisis of youth in Africa. And if we are not careful, in the next 4 to 5 years, we're going to have a kind of implosion of the continent.
Absolutely, because when you look at the statistic, I mean, the youth comprises about 50%, if not more, of the population
more.
In Africa. More than 50%. So it definitely an issue is there to addressing the needs of the young people.
Absolutely.
Girls and boys. So it's not enough. What needs to be done? What needs to be scaled up?
Yeah, let me give you an example. As I speak, you have 13 million young people who are supposed to be in school and who are not. And I'm just talking about two countries, between Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. I was in Mali some months ago, in Kidal, and the schools are closed now for three and a half, four years.
Mm.
And these are the adults of tomorrow, number one. Number two, when these young people are in the streets, they're exposed to all kinds of manipulation and instrumentalization. And today, unless we offer young people alternative other than migration, we are just encouraging them to enter into terrorism activities.
Absolutely.
So the best protection for young people today is to invest in their education, to give them access to skills, to provide them with productive employment, and to make sure that they have access to health. But at the same time, we need to do something about this high population growth, because you cannot address, if we cannot address currently the 13 million additional young people in the job market every year, think about what's going to be, what's going to happen in a few years when we'll be talking about 25 million or 30 million a year. So time is now for the African continent, its leadership, but also their partner, to do something for young people.
So when we look at high population growth, that also that can lead us also to the issue of family planning. We will continue the discussion. Mr. Ngam, we have to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll definitely continue to talk about this very, very important topic. So stick around. It's time for a short break, and now this is the news with Sanusi Diallo.
Cancer drug portability costs much in the U.S. than in poor countries and even other wealthy nations, but a study shows they are less affordable in some developing countries despite the lower price. The research released Monday said relative to the ability to pay, cancer patients in China and India face much higher prices than wealthy in U.S. patients. Australia had the most affordable prices for both cancer medicine under patent and less expensive generic. The pilot study examined list prices, also called retail price, and affordability in Australia, China, India, Israel, the United Kingdom, United States, and South Africa. The main advice for the millions of Muslims who are beginning the Ramadan fasting period on Monday: moderation when breaking the fast each night. Dr. Razin Harouf, an anesthetist from Oxford, cautioned against eating too much during the non-fasting hours, according to NHS Choice Britain Health website. He said the pre-dawn meal should include food that are filling yet provide energy for many hours, such as carbohydrates. NHS Choices, as well as other websites, offer meal plan for those adhering to Ramadan fasting, but all suggest food to avoid, especially during the night meal, include those high in fat and sugar, as well as fried food. In addition, sleeping and hydrating are also secret to staying healthy during the month of Ramadan. Huge quantities of live chicken and other table birds are stockpiling on Cameroon's southern borders. This follows a ban on Cameroon table bird by neighboring Gabon and Guinea Equatorial. The H5N1 virus reappeared in Cameroon on May 22nd after an 8 years absence. It claims 20,000 chicken and 20,000 other were destroyed in the capital Yaoundé. Cameroon Minister of Livestock, Fishing and Animal Industry, the Dr. Tiger, say among measures taken to protect both people and birds from further contamination was the prohibition of the sale of poultry in Yaoundé, the only town affected so far. And that's the wrap-up for the latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, you are listening to Health Chat, and today we are discussing the demographic dividend. And our guest is Mr. Mabenge Ngom, Regional Director for Western Central Africa with the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA. Mr. Ngom, before the break, we touched on the issue of population growth. And population growth is really a key fact when it comes to development, looking at economic growth. So how do we address this issue? First of all, fundamentally, what is the problem? Is this a problem? And if it is, what is the source of the problem?
Well, I think I would say that there are many problems. But before I flag a few of them, let me say that with the current growth, Africa will reach 2.4, 2.5 billion around 2050. Will double its current size, currently 1.2 billion. And as I said earlier, when you are not able to deal with a situation, I don't think that it is wise to increase to double the situation in question. So that it is as simple as that. So if you have a family of two and you are not able to give them, you know, proper education, quality health, opportunities, the situation will get worse if they become four, five, or six. It's as simple as that. So coming back to the issue of family planning, I think one of the issues is really access. You have a large number of women who want to have access to family planning and who are not. They cannot have access currently. They want, they don't have access. And those who have access very often do not have access to good quality services. And I think it's a right issue. And you have another group of women who do not know, and I think we are working on what we call demand creation, so they can know what to do to make sure that they can have control over the number of children they want to have. So the choice issue. So it's a right issue, it's a human right issue, it's a woman right issue, it's a woman health issue.
Yes. Just talking about women's health issues, is there a relationship between the education of mothers and the survival of children? Because I think those two should be linked in order to understand and comprehend the action, the change that can bring the dividend in the fight.
Oh, no, definitely. I think the data, the evidence, the body of evidence is abundant on this one. And I think there is obviously a strong link between the level of education and the chance of a child from a mother to survive. But also, there are also evidence that show that educated women, especially when women spend between 4 and 5 years in secondary school, they tend to get married at a later stage. That have also an effect in their health and the health of their children, because they tend to have less children than girls who leave school very early and who are exposed to early marriage, early pregnancy, and related disease.
Okay, you have explained, I mean, UNFPA and specialists or health specialists in Africa have explained to people, to the leaders and traditional leaders, that early marriage is a violence against a young girl. But are you still facing opposition and reactions on the ground when you try to implement those ideas? And if so, what is a dividend bringing as a new...
An alternative,
yes,
maybe,
alternative.
Because when you look at the issue of early marriages in many societies, it's cultural. It's a culture, and really addressing culture can be very challenging. So, what is the case on the ground?
Well, I can say that we're making progress, but progress is slow, and we should find a way to accelerate it. Of course, we're talking about changing some of the practices that have been here for a while. And, you know, unless we use a combination of response or tools, we'll continue to be slow. Which is why in UNFPA we are exploring all options to make sure that we address this big issue. For instance, we have recently organized a major initiative with religious leaders to have a conversation with them, and we were surprised by the level of openness, by the level of engagement, by also the level of convergence with regard to the need to give women choice, the need to make sure that sexual and reproductive health issues are properly handled at a local level. Mm-hmm. I see one small difference that transferred in the conversation. It was all about the how-to, but they're generally supportive, they're generally convinced, and I think it's all about the sensitiveness they require in terms of handling some of these issues.
Okay.
But change is happening.
Change is happening. And the reality is, as you mentioned, and I think we all agree that there is a need for more awareness, more engagement from at all level. You know, that you'd spoke about a meeting in July in Rwanda, but there is an upcoming meeting this month in Dakar with some a high-level guest. It's a high-level symposium that will take place. What are the goals and expectations of this upcoming meeting as opposed to the one in July?
Okay. On June 20, Dakar will host for the first time the meeting of the National Transfer Account Network. They will meet in the first time in Africa between June 20 and June 24. And the first day after the opening, we're going to have a high-level symposium on the demographic dividend and Africa's development. So we'll bring together the research community, the development actors, governments across Africa, young people, and this one is really important, and I will come back to this, but also former leaders of the continent working with what we call the Africa Forum, that is the type of the association of the former head of state. And it's important to have this people, we call them the elders, because as you know, in Africa, the voice of the elders is vital, is vital. Second, we also managed to bring young people to make sure that we no longer decide for them. We no longer do what we have been saying in the UN for the last few years, for the last year and so, leave no one behind. Now it's about putting young people first. We want young people to make decisions for themselves. We want young people to be present when their issues are being discussed. So it will be all about bringing all actors together so we discuss how we can make sure that by the time the head of state meet in Kigali in July, you have a large number of perspectives. You have ideas and what needs to be done to harness the demographic dividend in Africa, building on the latest outcome of the research institution like Berkeley, Hawaii, the Center of Economic and Financial Research in CHESS, and so on and so forth.
So moving forward, looking ahead, when we talk about this has several layers of issues to address indeed when we're looking at the demographic dividend. But if you were to talk in terms of priorities, short-term priorities, what would you say?
No, I would say that I think the first thing to do is really to invest in family planning. It's vital. Second is to address some of the vulnerabilities of young people, vulnerabilities that prevent them from access to hope, access to opportunities, access to skill, and access to education. Number three, I think there is a need to build on successful initiatives and avoid starting new initiatives while we have tested a large number of initiatives with a few of them successful. When we were in Banjul some weeks ago, the call for young people was really to go to scale when it comes to initiatives like the Sahel, Women, Empowerment, and Demographic Dividend, an emerging successful partnership between UNFPA, the World Bank, the Gates Foundation, and WHO, that is the health organization of ECOWAS. So what young people want is really not to start a new small initiative, but to build on existing successful initiatives and to go to scale. What is being tested in the Sahel is valid for the Lac Chad Basin or the Manoriva Union or the Great Lake Region or the Gulf of Guinea or the Horn of Africa.
Okay. Mr. Ngom, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today and being part of our program.
Thank you. Thank you, Mabigi Gom.
And Khalil Gay, thank you so much. It's good to have you on air with us.
Okay, thank you.
And that was Mabenge Ngam, rather, Regional Director for Western Central Africa with UNFPA. Thanks to all of you listeners for joining us today. Thanks to Khalil Gay. And I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vonganyi and Sanusi Diallo for the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.